Welcome everyone to the blessings of Christ today on this last day of August. Wow. I think we've just completed, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, the hottest month of our year. It was scorching on some days. I kind of laughed and said, I'll cook my eggs on the car. It was really that hot. But today is a glorious day in North Texas, and I hope it is for the rest of you who are in the United States. And I've even checked in some other countries where we have participants, and seems like the weather's pretty doggone good right now. But you can always make the weather in your heart good by your right orientation to life, by your intentions to life, and how you hold everything in your heart. Even hard times can be your greatest lesson, and for that, you embrace them. But before we get into our lesson today, let's just welcome everybody. How are you, Nancy?
Really good. Having a wonderful day today, and beautiful here. It's actually September 1st, and
Oh, that's right. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. August is behind us, and we here in Texas had an unusually, well, at least down here, we had a pretty good good August. We only had 1 week in the hundreds, so speaking of weather anyway, we've been really blessed. It's been beautiful, and today's breezy, and maybe we'll get a little rain. It's just been great. So just really happy to be here, Glenda, every week, and so thank you for this opportunity to be together and to dip into this whole concept of will and God's will. So pretty great for me here.
Oh, yeah. And sorry about being out. I guess I'm just out of time on everything this day.
No, there's no such thing, right?
Well, you know, that's true. I'm in my time and God's timing, and hoping that it shows up for everybody else in a coordinated way. So that's the best we really, really can do. And we're going to talk about that today. It's part of how we coordinate intentions in the world. We try our best to schedule things and to be exactly on point with one another, but sometimes it doesn't work out quite like that. So then we find out how to deal with what we've got. Before we get into that, though, I want to, first of all, thank so many of you who sent your requests by email. And even though I was pretty tied up today, I read them all. And I just didn't get back to acknowledging you, but I read them all, and so glad to be here for you to help you through them. Some of them are very challenging. Others are just garden variety stress about things that happen in life. And I think that what we're going to talk about today is going to address a lot of those problems, because most of our problems in life are part of the entanglement with the different levels of will and intention that are playing out in life, in our life, in the world, and right now, especially in the world of politics, which is getting a little more reckless by the day. I've gotten to where I really only browse through the highlights and let the rest go, because there's no coming to conclusions right now. And I think you can feel what's on the wind and decide within yourself how you want your kite to blow in the wind, what direction, what you want to get out of it, what you hope for your future, what you want to provide for your next generation, family and friends and the world. And follow your dreams, follow your heart always. Follow your love, and you're most connected to God when you do that. But remember, love is not always the sweet platitude that says, just do this and do that and be content with life and let it flow through. That's generally not love. That is most of the time avoidance. That's most of the time superficiality, not really dealing with life, because let's face it, my friends, in this natural world, we have tsunamis, we have hurricanes, we have forest fires, we have drought, we have heat, we have freezing climates at times. And we have hardships that we have to deal with in the family of humanity and find a way to deal with those hardships together. And those hardships that involve working together, planning together, living together, cannot be solved with simple, sweet platitudes. They cannot be solved with avoidance and aversion. And we don't talk about those things. You can't do that. You won't get anywhere, my friends. And I say that without getting involved in the particulars of what's going on. But I do say that in the spirit and in the name of Christ, look at what's going on in the world. He says that a fig tree that cannot bear fruit must be cut down. Must be. He doesn't say maybe it will wilt. He says must be cut down. Okay? He says that things that are causing negative or no results in the world, avoiding the problem, not solving the problem, must be ended. And he used the word must. It's not optional. And we're going to talk about why that is today. Because you might think, well, why does it have to be that way? Why can't we just think sweet, happy thoughts and have them come true? Okay, well, Disney didn't create this world. Disney didn't create the universe. And we're going to talk about the intentions that did create the universe that we have to deal with, including your intentions, which cannot be swept under the carpet, because they will continue to emerge and reemerge. And no matter how you think you changed your mind through the years of living, Yeshua says very clearly in Love Without End, if you would change your life, you must change your heart. There's another must. You can't change anything with your mind. You have to change your heart. So I would recommend in this world, underneath all the verbiage and the intrigue and conflict that verbiages and mind messages may generate, where is a person's heart? Their heart is what will manifest. It will be what's true, no matter what the mind says. The mind is often, and I hope you don't take this in the wrong way, but the mind is always, often a liar. The heart never lies. Okay? If you look at where a person's heart is, you'll be 1,000 times closer to the truth than if you only scope around where the mind goes and what the mind claims. Nancy, you studied Love Without End a lot. How would you feel about that?
Yeah, I've always loved that the mind's not the boss. It's a derivative aspect of ourself. It's a great servant, like you said, and it's a wonderful tool. And what did he say? It's blissful when it's working right. And but the heart is the place. It's the higher intelligence. And we can't study that enough or empower that enough or live that way enough. It's where it's at. The heart is where it's at. Well, it really is.
It is. And the heart is instinctively, naturally obedient. The mind is, it actually loves to be disobedient. It loves to be, because it thinks it can create its own reality. It's,
right.
Well, I'm smart. I'm just going to create the reality that I want. I'm sorry, folks. I would highly recommend a webinar that we released to the world a number of years ago. I think now it's probably as much as 10 years ago. It's called The 12 Laws of the Universe That Always Work. And those laws of the universe are non-negotiable. They were embedded in the framework and the fiber of this universe, such as the law of gravity, okay, the law of cause and effect. And there's 12 of these rascals, and you would do well to study them, because anything more superficial than that has to be approached with caution. Now, it may be good. The mind can come up with a lot of things that are just not proven yet. It can come up with a lot of good ways to circumvent an issue or to manage a situation. But you have to take a look at, is this what is this mind being obedient to? Is it being obedient to laws of the universe, to God,
right,
to the heart that's in charge? What is this mind being obedient to? Or is it being obedient to hidden factors of power that we know nothing about? What is it being obedient to? Okay. And if it's just running loose and wild, well, it's worthless.
Yeah, and how is it being led astray, and how is it being duped?
Exactly.
The mind can be duped,
exactly,
and led astray.
So
the heart,
we've got
the heart knows.
Uh-huh. We've got a lot of ammunition in this book for navigating life and navigating it in a successful way. And so the reason I decided to have the fourth way to path to success divided into two parts is because the second part is not really a pathway, but it's a foundation. And it has its own powers as a foundation. And I wanted you to look at that because one of the most frequent things we wonder about is, well, what is the will of God in all of this? Right? It could be in anything from a job you want to take to how you can get your kids focused on something a little more constructive. Or about the state of the world and where you should live and how you should vote. You think, well, what's the will of God in this? And we need to look at that without me hitting on specifics of anything. I'll leave that to you. But I'm going to highlight the foundations of what you're really looking at. And when Yeshua and I were having our conversation, these many, many, many years ago, 1992, wow.
Yeah,
we took up the subject of will, and he saw, I think he must have seen a little bit of a tortured look on my face, because he needed to relieve what I was struggling with about God's will and my will and what in the dickens is will, okay? And he said, let's change the word here to something a little softer. It's the same thing, but will has become hardened in the world because we've associated it with too many powers that are just enforced upon us, and not necessarily God's will or the will of any person you would agree to influence you. Okay, let's take another word. Let's use intent. And he said, actually, once we change the vocabulary, we're going to be able to go much deeper in the study of what will is. And Boy, we sure did. We sure did. And I want to read to you some of that passage. It's the one I sent you in the email invitation today, which you can keep and refer to. But also, you could go to page 380 to 382 in the in the final revised edition of Love Without End, the one that has an index in it. And it is, I don't know if somewhere along the line somebody will discover a missing comma. So it might be subject to minor revision, but not any kind of revision that would require that it be declared. This is the final take, because many people and my own acute memory from having gone through it so many times teaching it really produced the final masterpiece. And I really can't thank Anthony McGettigan enough times for his diligent work in going through this with a fine-tooth comb with me. And he literally produced the index. I'm sure that Anthony was greeted in heaven by the angels, because he left a magnificent legacy for the rest of us, including my own ease of reference in going back to finding what was written years ago. So as we go through this, I may skip a little bit for the sake of time, but you have it sent to you. And I'm going to start with I took an introduction that preceded intent a little bit, because it's necessary. He wrote, the miracle of truth is that it is unique for each and yet constant for all. This relates to another, just a moment. Nancy?
Yes.
Do we need to mute someone in the background?
I'm not catching it.
Okay. Yeah,
I can mute myself if that would help.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
I'll try.
Let's try. We'll see.
Okay.
All right. Going back to this, I just want the recording to be perfect for those who come back to listen. All right. I'll start that again. The miracle of truth is that is unique for each and yet constant for all. This relates to another principle which is crucial to alignment with divine will, and that is the law of mutuality. Mutuality allows expansion and differences to occur in the universe or among humankind without loss of harmony. All communication is based upon this law of mutuality. If there were no mutuality between two people, there would be no sense in talking. Neither person would understand the other. However, without different experiences or viewpoints to share, what would be the point of communicating? On the very obvious level, having a common language is mutuality. Through a common language, differences may be compared and overcome if necessary. Through a common language, differences may be compared. No, I skipped a sentence. Through mutual understanding, we are set free from another's viewpoint. You do not have to serve the dreams of another. All you have to do is honor the other person's right to have a dream. For in honoring his right, you honor your own. This is the blessing of mutuality. In other words, what you extend to others will be extended to you. Another way we said in the contemporary vernacular is what goes round comes round. So there's a lot of ways of saying that, but the fact is we share a common existence, and the ability to share that common existence is embedded in the fabric of this universe. Now that was me talking. Okay, the law of mutuality is perhaps the finest guideline to the Creator's will, for God does not violate his own laws. It is his will that you grow and challenge yourself in relation to realistic possibilities, and that you apply your efforts to that which will be mutually beneficial to all concerned. What you're led to do may seem difficult in relation to your confidence or self-esteem, but such considerations are often denials of reality. It will never be impossible in relation to what truly is. The truth was clearly illustrated by my own experience of painting the lamb and the lion. The calling was most definitely beyond my level of confidence. Really, it was. And the likelihood of being able to produce such a painting seemed almost out of reach. Nevertheless, the reality was that I had actually spent the whole of my life planning for that challenge. I just didn't see it. It's just that until 1991, my covenant and my preparation had not coincided with a meaningful or revealing way that it could happen. So as I went through the years of my life, well, it started when I was 3 years old. My mother asked me what I wanted to be. And I didn't say, I want to be. I said, I am an artist. Just, I am an artist. And let her hang with that, absorb it, do what she wanted to do with it. And I didn't need to. In fact, I rarely repeated it through the years because I didn't need to. My mother enrolled me in art classes by the time I was 5 years old. I was always the one who did best in the art projects at school, so I was always given the lead in new art projects. Got a scholarship to college in art. Got another scholarship in art, and so it goes. I was and this is a good example of what we're going to deal with in a minute, which is the difference between will and intent. Remember, I planted a seed when I was 3 years old when I said, I am an artist. Okay? I am. Went through the years of prep, not really being hyper about it or forcing it. It was just there. It was like a little seed that had been planted, and it was just growing at regular intervals and poking its head up to get a little bit of light, thinking its roots to get a little bit of water, and going on with living, never thinking about what it was doing. Okay. Well, I become really an acknowledged and blooming, successful young artist when I am asked to paint someone's portrait. I resisted it at first, and then I thought, oh, well, okay. I don't have any other commissions, and I need the money. So I did it. I painted a portrait. And I had just recently met the man who was to be my first husband. He was really an extremely accomplished person in the art field, art history, museum work. He'd worked at the Metropolitan Museum as a curator, taught at major universities, NYU, and had just come on the faculty at Tulane University where I was. And he saw my portrait and he said, you need to be a portraitist. This is awesome. He said, this is a masterpiece. I said, well, I didn't think much of it. And he said, no, you need to be painting portraits. He went out and started getting me portrait commissions. And I said, no, no way. The one thing I will not be is a portraitist. The one thing I will not do is paint portraits. All right. That was my will. bouncing off of circumstances I didn't like. Will can often be full of force and contention or objection, because it's like where the mind enters in to guide your life away from what it thinks it should be. The will is very mind-based and usually force-implemented. But remember, that seed was planted from long ago that I am an artist, and it just sprung up from within me. Well, okay, I can be an artist with any subject. I started painting portraits, and I became one of the most referred artists in the world. The Metropolitan Museum in New York City referred me as an artist to universities with retiring presidents and that sort of thing. And I painted celebrities, and I didn't like it, but I was good at it. And then finally I decided I just cannot take this whole definition of portraitist into me, because it's not something I can identify. So I went on with other things to get to the point of the story. And when the when the inspiration to paint Yeshua came around, my first reaction was, oh, no, not another portrait. Please, God, not another portrait. And the message I got back is, maybe this was the portrait you were prepared for. So there is a good example of intent springing up, despite the fact that my will was set against it. And it truly was. I mean, I prayed to have that calling taken away from me, given to someone else, flowed in another direction. It can't possibly be me. All right, well, it was. So that's history. You know all about that. So as we're sitting and we're talking, and he changed the subject, well, he knew that we needed to change the subject, because we're going on to talk about something that is planted very deep in our soul, and that is intent. We have intentions. You have them. Everybody has them. And God has them. So as we look through the four levels of intent, I want to get back to this, because okay. I think I was reading off of what I sent you, and I think I may have sent you something that was not correct for today, but I'll send it to you. Okay. He wrote, the universe is built on four levels of intent. First is the intent of God. You can summarize the intent of God very sweetly and simply this way. It is love. Love is the will of God. This is why I gave you love as my only commandment. For love shall triumph in all things as the will of God. No matter what illusions seem to subvert the process, love will triumph in all things as the ultimate will of creation. The will of God is that the best will happen to you. The will of God is that the best will happen in life. The will of God is that the power of grace, each one will be lifted above the delusions of separation and taken home. You shall never be left in any situation that shall have the power to destroy your soul. Love, and only love, is the will of God. Divine will is very easy to know once you understand that. And I would like to biblically confirm this in the book of Genesis. At the end of every day of creation, he reviewed it and said, this is good. His intent was that it all be good. And when it was created, he confirmed that it was good. That is his intent. Now, we look around the world and we don't see love in everything. We don't see good in everything. Well, what's going on? We look at our own life and we want the best to happen, but we don't always see it. So what's going on? All right. Well, I'm going to go back and use my life as an artist as an example. We plant the seed. Intent is a seed that you plant and you let it grow, knowing that it needs to develop its roots. It needs to develop strength to push up, and then it needs light to become all that it was created to be. And as that seed becomes a little sprout, a little seedling, a little tiny baby plant, it's growing. It's becoming what it was intended to be. And we don't know at every stage of its life, will it be productive? Will it bear fruit? And what will it be or do next? That happened to me throughout the development of my career as an artist. And I objected to many things. I went through a time where I was directed more toward art history and then more toward teaching and more toward other forms of art. But always the intent that was planted kept pushing up to get more light. And as it pushed up to get more light, I became what I was created to be. That is how intent works. It's not forced. Intent is not forced. It's planted. It's planted in the substructure of your life. And that would include your heart. And I'm talking about the sacred heart, the heart of your being. That's where your intent is planted. But as it grows, it may encounter will, which is like a wind trying to blow it in a different direction. And sometimes that will is made up of different components of life, such as the influence of people who believe and say they love us, but they don't see. I was told 1,000 times, Glenda, you'll never be able to make any money as an artist. And I said, well, then I'll live with less money. And they would groan and say, you are incorrigible. And I said, yeah, I am incorrigible. So, but that wasn't the only objection. There were many, many different ways. And like, well, you've got to spend more time with your classwork. You can't always be in here painting. Okay. All right. And then, well, we want to set up a home. And I got a teaching job. And then, well, he goes, you know what it's like. I don't have to give you any more examples on that. People who are well-meaning and really want to help you, they've got their own ideas. And then there's the environment that has its pressures. And all of that comes under the heading of will. But what you've got growing for yourself is intent. And you don't have to check it out every day. I think it's a good thing to pray about it. I think it's a good thing to look for little evidences in life. And on the subject of evidence, there's a certain kind of serendipity, meaning that it may peek out for a little sunlight under the most extraordinary circumstances. You may just be driving down the street, looking for a place to have lunch, and find something that triggers your intent in the shops along the way. Maybe your intent was to be a medical therapist. You really wanted to help people. You had noticed your mom and dad suffering when you were a child and others. You really wanted to understand that for yourself. And on your way to find a place to eat, you walked by a shop that had all kinds of therapeutic equipment. And just out of the blue, you decided to break off for a few minutes and walk in, not even knowing why, and you got lost browsing, and you killed 15 minutes of time, but it didn't matter because everything was interesting to you. Everything was interesting. Well, take notice of those little things in your life that rupture through the veil of predictable determination. You're on your way to get lunch, but something interferes with that. Something interrupts that. You may find intent breaking through, and that could happen because it's the will of God ringing your bell, but it could happen because something in the universe right now is showing you that a little more availability exists for what you once wanted to do. You see, when I was young, being just a little girl, painter, artist type, there are all kinds of artists, but I was a painter type. How in the world would I ever make a career out of that? Well, I had to go further on down the line so that it could be revealed to me. And that's where we come into the second level of intent. It was placed by the Creator into the physical functions of our universe. This level of intent performs under the power of basically two principles. This is Yeshua speaking now. One is that life and the living shall prevail over the dead and the dying. That is the will of God. So whenever you support life and the living, you're in harmony with the will of God for this universe. The other principle that resides under this intent for physical well-being is the law of cause and effect. The Creator intends for the universe to return always to a state of balance. No matter how far a state of existence may swing to the left, it will always be rebalanced to the right and eventually back to center. This law of balance is so basic to the physical universe that what you sow, you surely also reap. What you do unto others will be done unto you. What you have planted is exactly what you will harvest. This is a fundamental system of justice that requires everything to balance in the end. If you live in such a way that you don't expect this to happen, you're going to be very surprised by the outcome in your life. For your life will become the reciprocal force to balance any imbalances you may have caused. All the books will balance, and life in the living shall prevail over the dead and the dying. That is all you have to remember about how the universe works. If you will understand these two principles, you know the intent of God in the realm of physical existence. And just as a footnote to that, probably the most repeated and frequent teaching of Yeshua to the apostles and to the crowds, the parable that was his favorite, was of cause and effect. What you sow, you shall reap. You cast your bread upon the water. It was one after another after another. And this is part of the law of mutuality, that everything belongs. And so for everything that moves in one direction, something must replace it from another direction. There is no vacuum allowed in the physical universe. No vacuum possible in the quantum universe, and none allowed in the material universe. There will be closure. There will be rebalance of everything. And, we have, it's sometimes not easy to deal with this because the need for rebalancing in relationships, in work, finances, cause and supply and demand, cause and effect. All of these things can interfere with what we would like to do next, because we've got to take care of, we've got to do our laundry first and hang the clothes out to dry. We've got to do that before we can get on with the next order of creation, because God doesn't allow things to get out of hand for very long. He doesn't. He'll let us have our playtime. He'll let us try what we think might be a good idea, because he believes in us, and he believes in the goodness of our heart, so that when we embark on a trial in maybe some extreme direction, he'll play it out with us to see if we're capable of handling it. But what allows him to know we're capable of handling it is, can we balance it out? Can we tidy up the bookkeeping? Can we get an equitable result that is mutually beneficial in all ways? And is it truthful? Can it be dealt with in a truthful method where all is revealed? So he judges us as we go along. And most of his judgments are not the kind of hellfire and brimstone type of judgments a lot of preachers have told people to expect. It's more like, look, you got to get your ducks in a row. Otherwise, you'll never get them in the barn. Okay? Let's get these ducks in a row. You're not going to be allowed to have any more until you organize what you've got. It's more like that, my friends. And if you're finding, you think God's will is not working for you, it is. It's just it may be managing what you didn't manage. And it's got to manage that before it lets you do anything else. This universe is actually programmed by God's will for goodness. The first being, of course, love. The second being cause and effect, and for everything to be in balance, and that life in the living shall prevail. You know, so we move on. We've got the third level of intent. I hope this is helping you along the way to deal with will a little better. The third aspect of intent relates to the subject of respect and justice within the brotherhood of mankind. You do not live alone. You cannot pretend you do. And you cannot use segregation to create a partial separation that allows things to work over here but not over there. You can't do it. You won't be allowed to do it. You'll be judged. And like I said, it won't be this kind of judgment from a God on a throne throwing lightning rods at you. It will be from the God of creation saying, look, there's got to be justice here. Come on. Let's correct this. Let's get moving in a different direction, because it's got to work for everybody, and that's my law. All right? And so as we look at situations, we have to look at what's going to work the best for everybody. That's the third level of intent, because it helps you to deal with the simple fact that everybody else in life and everything else in the universe has its own intent. There's nobody without some intent, and that intent might be as basic or simple as survival. It might be also an intent that we would not particularly admire, called greed, but it's still an intent. And it needs correcting. okay? That survival needs correcting. No one in an abundant world should be worried about survival. No one should be worried about survival. You know, we don't have to all be at the same level of financial capability, because so many people wouldn't want it. I know tons of people who wouldn't want it. And then other people would not be careful enough to manage it. But greed is a runaway train, and we are warned against it. It is the source, Yeshua says, in love without end, the source of all evil. And so where you find greed, you will find evil. That doesn't mean that the person exemplifying greed is fundamentally an evil person. I'm not saying that, and nor did he. But greed is kind of like a hardcore drug addiction. Once it's got control of you, it's a runaway train. And that's where the evil is in that runaway train. And even if the person is godly and pro-survival, you have to watch for greed running the show. If it's there, and one way you can tell the difference between greed and affluence is the three previous principles, the intent of God and the intent of the universe. Okay? Is cause and effect really, really working for that person or that situation? Is it focused on life and the living? Or is it focused all on machinery? The dead and the dying. Replacing people. Not a direction to go in without caution. Without a lot of caution, my friends. And then last of all, but not the least, one you most need to pay attention to, and that is your own intentions. This is Yeshua speaking. If you would direct your life in a purposeful way, you must be cognizant of your own intentions and understand what you have set in motion. These seeds are planted possibly a long time ago and are still growing. You may not see them. This is not something you have to inventory every day. Yet the more fully you understand what you set forth, the greater wisdom you will have in managing your life. If you would be successful in life, you need to work with all four levels of intention, he said. You need to work with the will of God in all things, to understand and respect the universal imperative for balance and for favoring life and the living. You need to observe and recognize the intentions of others around you and to either honor them or deal with them. All too often, one person blames another as being the source of a problem, when there is usually a shared responsibility in any situation. Finally, you need to acknowledge your own intentions by bringing them forth into conscious understanding. Nurture them, care for them, or change them if necessary. In final analysis, get back to yourself. When you do that, you are addressing something that you actually can change. In this regard, he made a very crucial instruction that we can only change our own intentions. You may be able to persuade another to redirect intention, but you cannot do it for him. Intentions are sealed in the heart. This is why you must change your heart if you would change your life. You can change your mind 1,000 times. And I was reading from that. Let me repeat that. You can change your mind 1,000 times and you will never touch your intention. If you never enter your heart, you will forget what you have placed there and lose command over it. And this is Yeshua speaking. You're not going to change the will of God. You are not going to circumvent the two principles of intent placed into the universe. And you're not going to change the other person's intent. However, it would be wise to negotiate with those who do not support you or align with those who do. You can change only your own intentions. This is where you begin. The most typical human mistake in situations of distress or crisis, where there is need of some change, is to try and change the things over which you have no effect. For example, a woman who is unhappy with her employment situation may try to change departments, programs, assignments, or locations. She may apply for a transfer from Milwaukee to Denver or attempt to change any number of things that have nothing to do with her own intent. The one thing that she needs to do is take stock of her own original intentions for being there. And examine how they have progressed or stagnated. In doing that, she can regain command of her situation and regain a sense of certainty on why she is there and what to do next. These four aspects of intention exist in any situation. I think I'll close it at that point because we need to get ready to share, have some sharing time, some thought about this, and I want to direct you to read these pages. I think this section of Love Without End is one of the most relevant to living in the world that he gave us. And it's worth reading a number of times. I have skipped around a little bit because actually it's about 10 pages long, that section of this chapter. And I couldn't get it all in, reciting it on the phone to you, which is why I spoke extemporaneously also, to try to compress some of the content. But I would like to open our community for questions or responses to this, and also questions if you or requests for blessing. So we can just wrap this up for today, for this, and we get ready for our blessing that shall bring us even more enlightenment than we got from studying the book. There's nothing more important than the blessings which will open your heart to where you and your intent for life can shake hands again. And that's what will change your life, when you and your intentions can embrace and know one another again and behold the life around you. And it won't be the same life as when you place those intentions. It may be that you placed those intentions when you were left alone after the passing of a parent or a sibling or the loss of a friend or a great disappointment in life or a move to another country. It's going to be different for everybody, but you will place intentions deep in your heart that have nothing to do with forming a goal or a program. See, when we think of will, we go back to, well, when did I start planning for this project? when did I decide to do this? That's, we're getting into will there, and will is all about dealing with the world and making things work in the world with your mind and negotiating with other people and so forth. I think you got the gist of that. But intent is the seed you plant inside. And there's not just one seed that you plant inside over the years of your youth. And most of them are planted. In my experience counseling people, most of these seeds of intention are planted before you're 30 years old, while you're still young enough that you really are still quite open to the heart of your being and to the a more innocent perspective of life. But so we'll wrap it up today on the presentation of this lesson, but the lesson itself will go on and on.
Yes, sure will. Thank you, Glenda. Gosh, a lot to ponder here. I love that he takes us back to our heart always. That's where our attentions are. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of chaos.
Always.
You know, I wonder if people, a lot of people aren't going in their hearts, but when they do, that's where they get the best picture of what's really going on. So thank you for always reminding us about that power and where we're meant to communicate with our source and the love that we are. And we do have some callers here. I will tell everybody, you know, I like to align things with Keys of Yeshua because I just works so well in our lives. My husband and I, we read these things all the time. So will and responsibility blend so beautifully with this lesson today, Glenda. So if anybody gets a chance to pull that one out and take a peek.
Will and intention.
It's will and responsibility. Yeah, it's in the Keys of Yeshua, and it's so powerful, and your key is so incredible.
It is.
So
I'll just give it a concept to the greater extent. Yes, it is very powerful.
It really is. So I'm going to open Elizabeth's line. Hi, Elizabeth. We're so happy you're here today.
Oh, hi, Nancy. Hi, Glenda. I just will be quick. I sent you a few requests this afternoon, and one was about my friend George French in New Orleans, who passed away just on Wednesday night. I would like a blessing for him, but that was in the email. I just had another thought that I'd like to ask a blessing for his family and for them. They're arranging a funeral for him next Saturday down in New Orleans, and I just know that they need some help to get that together in the most perfect, wonderful way to be a vehicle for so many of George's friends. He was a musician, well known in New Orleans. To come to say goodbye and just show their love and respect for him. So I just ask for a blessing for George French's family, those who are arranging the funeral, if they would be led and guided by Yeshua to make the place show up, the right place, the right time, all the details. If Yeshua could help with that, I'd be most, most grateful. And that was all I wanted to say. I know there's many people on the call. Thank you,
And let's ask the angels to come down and bless the ceremony to provide his gateway to higher ground.
Exactly. I know he was in a lot of pain and distress, and it's wonderful that he's been released from that and that the angels just take him home now so he can be at peace and in his light body of love and light. That's what
I
like.
Amen.
Thank you,
and he is. We do not die, my friends. We do not.
No,
only
I know.
The body does. We only do not die. It's hard for those who are still in a body to accept that because they want us to stay here. We miss those who go on, but we can stay connected.
Yes. Of course we can, and I'm relieved that he's gone because he was in so much pain, and it was the time and. I know I'm connected. I can feel him around. And my heart has a hole in it where he was. But all the memories will flood into that hole. All the beautiful memories will flood in and fill that up. And he's now with God and he's at peace. And that's what's given me so much comfort and relief that he's with God now, and that's where he needed to be. So I'm going to miss him physically big time, but that's just a process of grief that we humans have to go through. You know, it's just not being texting
and
him or calling him every day.
Mm-hmm.
So
Yeshua wept also.
Yeah.
So it's part of living down here, you know. We don't want our friends to leave.
Yeah. But that's the way.
Well, thank you for bringing him into our circle today and bringing him into the blessing, Elizabeth. We're so happy that you did that today.
It was very important for me to just speak to you both today with his name. I felt that after I sent the email, I just have to call and ask, because I know his family needs some help to get this whole thing together, and it'll be beautiful.
We
so
will.
Thank you both so much. That's given me a great comfort that I've spoken to you both today. Thank you.
And actually what I will do is I'll bring back the many, many exquisite memories I have of living in New Orleans. And listening to the music locally.
The whole
environment and the spirit.
Yes.
Wonderful
thank
place.
You, Glenda. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. We love you, and we'll see you next week for sure. I'm going to open up Ken's line, Glenda. Ken, welcome.
Holy moly. Every week you guys just knock it out of the park, Glenda. It's just incredible. And you know, it's when I hear your message, it just like so resonates with so many little things that take place during the week and put greater meaning to things that happen and blah, 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 blah. And so let me make a point or two and then throw in a request. And
sure.
I guess the first point is that when you were going over the four levels of intention, and you kind of went through all four, I was kind of thinking about it. It says, okay, how do these four things structurally relate to one another? And the first one being God. Well, God is just the existence of consciousness and life and intentionality in the universe as a whole. Then comes cause and effect. And that's just the energetic balance. You look at, you know, the structure of an atom, you look at the structure of matter, it always is seeking to come back to balance. And so that's just the physical interpretation or the physical manifestation of that principle everywhere. Then comes into justice and kind of how we deal with our neighbors. Well, that's honoring the free will of everyone around us and recognizing that free will, we have the ability to make free will, but we don't have the ability to assert that will onto others. And we also don't have, quote, the right to think that our free will can go into fundamental defiance of the previous two laws of the universe, basically consciousness,
exactly.
divinity and balance, cause and effect. And then, of course, the last one comes down where the rubber hits the road and says, you know, if you can't take the stick out of your own eye, don't even bother trying to judge the stick in somebody else's eye. So it comes down to deal with that thing that you can deal with, which is yourself, mm-hmm. and that as you create that balance or that field of balance around yourself, that will be the thing that other people see around you, and then that will be the thing that replicates or incentivizes change for other people to see, because that's that felt sense that says, I don't know what that person is saying, but I love their demeanor, and I love the energy that they're putting off, so therefore I have to find out more. And that's where
exactly.
curiosity comes in.
And development and exploration of new concepts. Yeah, we've just got a whole universe among ourselves to explore. And just to recap what you said, it's a beautiful sequential development that starts with love, God, okay, goes through these many, many layers of possibility and probability, development and shape and performance, and so many levels of goodness in creation, and then ultimately culminates in individual perceptions, mm-hmm. namely each of us with our perception, which in its final and perfected form is love. So it starts with love and it ends with love.
Exactly. And it was so interesting because this is my second point. Last night I just stumbled across a movie on YouTube called The Peculiar Life of Benjamin Buttons. And it's a delightful movie. And it takes place in like the early 1900s, and it's about this, I'm not going to spoil it, but it's about this young man who kind of grows up and his very unique experiences, and he's born like in the late 1918 time period, and then he dies finally in, I don't know, 1960, 1970, something like that. And it's his whole life. And it was so profound because as I hear your message today, it just brought on a whole level of interpretation of what that film was all about. And the thing that struck me the most was during that time period, people had an up-close, direct experience with life and death, babies being born and elderly people passing away. Because mm-hmm. in the context of this movie, it was all kind of centered around a big boarding house, and that's where people kind of were born and died and things happened. So you got to see it like directly right on, and you got mm-hmm. to hear, you got to see the true intention and heart and soul of people, and you got to see how their quote wills would sometimes support that and sometimes take them away, but they would always come back to center. And so it's this magical panorama of how time works for us, even when we don't think it does. So it was just a really beautiful interpretation of it, and I just wanted to put that out. So if anybody hasn't seen it, go pull it up on YouTube. It's freebie, Benjamin Buttons, and I think you'll love it.
Oh,
I totally endorse it. I've seen it. I think I watched it twice. Larry found it, and he said, Glenda, you got to watch this. You'll love it. So I did. And you're right. It's really, it's just so, so positive and such a beautiful expression of life.
Yep. And thank you for that. And then the final thing is I'm just going to ask for a blessing for myself today because I've been dealing with finally coming to the end of horrendous kind of challenge with conditions that have affected my psychology and all sorts of different things, and just feeling like I want a little bit of support to really help me understand why I'm here, what I'm supposed to do, and where's the community that I feel like I need to land in my physical geography to find people to support me with that. And I certainly have my own ideas and kind of follow my heart in all directions, but, you know, having a little bit of extra support would be very, very much appreciated.
Okay. Well, we're sending that blessing request up to the one who can help you.
Right on.
He's got a lot of answers for you, and he will shower them upon you. You may not see them all at once because they will unfold much the way will unfold and intent. Whatever you are struggling with has at its center and its history an intent that you placed sometime in your life. You planted it like a seed, and it's growing. It needs to stretch its little limbs out, its little leaves out, and it's finding maybe the soil needs some water. It needs some sunlight. You know, it can't find the nourishment it needs. That's what I'm hearing from you. You can't find the support and the nourishment that little intention needs. But
yeah,
it helps if you can get back to exactly what that intent is and when it was placed and even review the other times in your life when it peeked its little head out to look at the sun. Because intentions do grow through the years, but we don't always cultivate. We could say, oh, it's showing its face. I know that I need to do this. But there was no way around you, no support system. There was no way of supporting it, no way of developing it. The intention I placed when I was 3 years old, for 20 years, had no way of developing. So I got on with life like any kid would. Horses, study, friends, growing up, college, you know, we do what we need to do. And we let the intentions we place in our life grow underground. And whatever you're dealing with is wanting to break the surface of ground. And you're wanting to know, how can this happen? And where can I go that will help it happen the best and find the best support? That's what I'm hearing you say. Based on my experience in life. Okay. And so let's just ask for this blessing of rain to come down on the soil and sunlight to bring the little plant up to the light.
That sounds beautiful, Glenda. And a blessing to you all, every single one of you.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you so much. For your strength. And, you know, sometimes we all feel alone when we're struggling with what you're struggling with. But let me tell you, it's an everybody struggle. Everybody struggles through this. Everybody. Because we plant our intentions underground where they can be protected and nurtured while they're in their infantile state. They're just within our heart, within our being, and given to life and God and possibility. And we get on with living. But what we could be better at doing is when we see it break ground a little bit, we could say, hello, hi, thank you for showing up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay if you need to go back to sleep. It's really good to see you. But you need to recognize that and not be discouraged, because it will never leave you. The intentions you place will never leave you.
It is very, very, very persistent, thankfully.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And it will never leave you. You could change your mind 1,000 times. But you won't change your heart. Well, yes, so you can change your heart, and that's when you liberate those intentions you placed in it. And that might be a little piece of work you could do.
Yeah.
Because we can actually build attitudes around, why isn't this happening? What did I do wrong? Or who has opposed me? We can build attitudes around it. And it helps if we get rid of those attitudes we put around it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because those answers are right there, Ken, for you. They're right there within you. And
they
you're
are.
Very, they're very sensitive and, I, you know, helpful.
That's
so,
right.
It'll be clear for you.
It took me 44 years. Let me just say this one. It took me 44 years to get rid of the attitudes I had around being a portraitist.
I see him every day. And the thing that I keep coming back to is the true power of who we are as spiritual beings. We have absolutely no clue of. And so every day, as if you're willing to do so, is to really try to shred the limitations that you've put in front of you, or that humanity has put in front of you, that blocks your true potential. You know, you're kind of saying, okay, it's this balancing act of, I know I can do it. I kind of know what I need to do to have it be done, but am I really willing to take on the responsibility once I get it done, once I release that being of who I truly am? And when I hear in services and when I hear you talking about Christ, it's not this being that I'm supposed to worship, but it's this brother that I'm trying to get to know so that he can show me who I truly am to become the benevolence to all. And that's it in a nutshell. And it's this balancing act between how do I do it and can I do it and what now happens, what's the repercussion if I actually do what I think I really want to do. So, yeah.
It's profound, Ken. It's profound. So you will be guided through that. And I thank you for sharing that because, you know, your perspective gives another opportunity for people to see how everybody goes through this, one way or the other. We each have different words for explaining it, different pathways, different objectives that are in our intent, but it's the same issue. It's the same issue. Coming to terms with yourself.
I'll let you go on to some others. But thank you. Thank you both.
Have a great week.
Okay,
God bless
Ken,
you, Ken.
We have our last caller, Glenda. We have Stormy here. Hi, Stormy. How are you today?
Hello. I'm doing well.
Good.
And I want to give an example of what you have been talking about, Glenda. So many years ago, it was my intent to bring balance to Islam. I talked with Muhammad. I says, your house needs to be cleaned up. Within a month, I meet by invitation the Sufi master of all of America, the spiritual teachings of Islam. After putting my hand on his chest and blessing him to say, love is who you are, he tells me, the Ayatollah has just given me the edict to create a new form of Islam in America. Because what works in Iran will not work in America. My intent is growing. That seed has been planted some 20 years ago. We all can have cause and effect. This is something that is very dear to me, my heart.
Oh, I feel it, Stormy. I feel that with you. I really do. And God bless you for putting that intent there and for sharing it with us. And I hope that it has this effect on everyone listening, that there's no level of intent that is too big for you to place. You don't think, I'm just a human being. I can only intend small things that are relative to my current dimensions of possibility. There's nothing too big for you to intend. And Stormy, I just love your contributions because always there's nothing too big for you to reach for. And you thrill my heart in that way about you.
Glenda, when I was 8 years old, I asked God to speak to me like Abraham. That I've had all of my life. He asked me to pray for Russia. I've done that until Russia finally became Russia. And as an 8-year-old boy, I said, well, God, what else would you have me pray for? And he says, Ben, anything that you pray for, I will support because you have a good heart.
That's it. And it's true. It's true.
This is within all,
my life.
All of us.
Yeah, and it's really true, Ben, and God has blessed you mightily. So thank you for being who you are and bringing your love into the world. We will remember you in the blessing today to shed light and power upon all that you've prayed for.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Thank you, Storm. Bless you. Okay, Glenda, we are here together. We are ready for a blessing and a time to surrender, and our line is clear, so let's all go that direction.
That's great. Okay, I was just getting a little water, and I'm going to close our window down. Okay, everybody, wake up, show up, let's get ready to receive. And what I want you to do is move. You've probably been sitting for a while, maybe laying down, maybe even took a nap in the middle. That's all okay, because the Spirit knows where you are and how to find you. But we need to get some movement going on right now, because we live in an energetic world where everything, even thought, is energy, which is why our thoughts can be sent over great distances. Prayer is energy, which is why our prayers can have an impact over great, great distances. There is no limit to where energy can travel if we put an intent on it. And this is just what we were talking about today. So let's be moving now. Let's get the energy flowing. It could start with something just as simple as stretching your hands and your fingers and making a fist to draw energy down into your hand, and then bending your arm back and forth, side to side. Then begin working on your legs, getting them to move, bend them at the knee, moving your feet back. I'm not going to create a drill here because we had a long lesson today, and so we're not going to form a drill on this, but I just want you walk would be great. Just walk around a little bit, turn your head to the right and left, and bend it forward, bend your back forward, twist your torso, most people, I think, can do that even sitting down, but whatever you can move, move it. Let's get it going. Let's get it flowing. It helps your spirit of life to move as well. Now we want to just take a very, very deep breath. Breathe in through your nose so that it goes up to the sinus cavity as well as your lungs. Fill your whole respiratory capacity with air. Breathe in. Hold it for a couple of seconds. Savor it. And now blow it out through your mouth so that you empty your lungs. Empty the whole capacity for air. Hold it for a couple of seconds. Make sure it's push and push and push so that it's empty. Now reverse it and inhale again deeply, deeply and fully until you can feel your whole body expanding. That's it. And expand as far as you can go and hold it for a couple of seconds. Yeah, just hold it, and now get ready to release it. This is the breath of life. And I want to get us back into our normal breathing, which we do mindfully. We call it the four square breath because it's kind of like a box we create around ourselves, a box filled with air and light and energy. where we give out. We exhale and give a gift into life to the count of four. Your count, however you want to go, fast or slow. Okay? And then you pause to that same count of four. Then you breathe in. Inhale to that same count of four. And receive to that same count of four. Feel the distribution of breath that you brought in as energy of life to your whole body and being. And now with the fullness of that being, be prepared to breathe out. Exhale and give a gift into life to the count of four. And then pause to the count of four so it can be received by life before you take again. This is the way life works. You give. You let your gift be received. You take. And then don't just take and waste. Take and receive. Receive what you take. And give again. And pause while it's being received. This is the greatest lesson I could give to anyone who wants to teach or serve, contribute, develop, or be of influence in life. Don't confuse the giving with the receiving. They're different. Giving is for others, and you respect their time to receive. Now, the others could be trees. Let's say you're walking through the forest. Let the trees receive what you give them before you receive what they're giving you. And you receive it. You take it, but you've got to give your time, yourself time, to receive before you give again. If you manage your life like a four square breath, you will find everything works better. You will find your intentions flourish. You will find that you are more in harmony with the intentions of others, and they will talk to you because they know you care. Okay. Now, let us be together on our four square breath, appreciating the divine grace of life, the treasure of life in the living that we give and we receive. Bathe ourselves in it as I offer my prayer to Yeshua. Dear Yeshua, you know we love you, but we're here to tell you we love you, to call you into our life, even though you're already there. We call you because we want you to know how much we care. How much we want to inhale your life, your love, your wisdom, your being, and your radiant, joyful, divine existence. We receive with joy and grace and humility for all that you can give us and receive from our request. Thank you for hearing our request. for receiving our prayers and for caring about those things we ask for. And we ask now, on behalf of the love this community shares together, we ask for the rest of humanity, that their cares be addressed, their problems be dealt with in gracious and meaningful ways, that their love be respected and given love in return. We ask that they find honor in life and meaningful ways of developing their life and moving forward. We ask that the hungry be fed. We ask that the sick be attended to properly, to heal quickly or be relieved from their pain in whatever way is their greatest good. We ask for peace on earth. And we ask that we may discover the rightness in our different ways of life or our different approaches to living so that we may find a commonality and a mutuality out of which we can build harmony so that we may live together. We ask that our faith in goodness be honored and manifest in a better world, so that we may see the things we've worked for coming to pass. Because what you came for was fulfilled. We know that our efforts can be fulfilled as well. We ask these things in your blessed name. Amen. Blessing givers, will you join me in offering and conducting the blessing of Christ and the Holy Spirit? Let us begin now.
Amen. Amen. And amen. Your blessing has been given. Now I want you to rest. Be quiet. Be still. Don't move for a while. Give it 7 minutes. Lying on your bed, on a sofa, a mat on the floor, just be horizontal, and rest. Without thoughts, do not continue your prayers. Be a receiver. Open to the intentions of God, like you were a whiteboard and he was writing on it. You may not see what he writes for a little while, but it will be there, and it will come to pass. I wish you a lovely week, many blessings, and goodbye for now. Come back next week. We love having you.